It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, and I even did them the courtesy of clearing my throat before I hit the record button.
Oh, that was nice.
All right, so we ended up with three.
Three? Just three? Are you sure?
Just three.
Okay.
I checked today.
Okay.
Just three.
All right.
And I only promised to read the one. We're going to read the one, and then we'll see how the episode goes.
Okay.
All right. So, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, go back at least one episode. I mean, come on. Anyway, the person who got it there first was Jazz, as to be expected. The Golden Girls Mad Lib in question is titled Picture It, Sicily, 1912. And those familiar with Golden Girls will know that Sophia, the eldest of the Golden Girls characters, youngest actress, was born and raised in Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
And she would regularly tell these stories that would always start with picture it, location, and year. And frequently the location was Sicily. Occasionally it was like Brooklyn, because that's where she moved when she came to America. Occasionally it'd be someplace different, but frequently it was picture it, Sicily, and then some year of her youth before she told the story.
And the actress that played her was great with that.
Marvelous.
I mean, I didn't really watch the show, but when I did, she was always a high point.
All right, so picture it, Sicily, 1912. And this is Jazz's take on that. Picture it. A tunnel. 1912. A crunchy peasant girl. Sorry, crunchy peasant girl meets a mirror. And they fall ghostly in love. Her porous parents disapprove, however. And she decides to dabble away from the village. Ooh, that was a good one. Dabbling. I'm going to start using that line. Do a little dabbling away from the village. For months, she travels the dingy countryside, riding a hedgehog, and living on gooseberries. Finally, she gathers up enough courage to return to her waterlogged village.
Oh, no.
Worried that she will never be accepted again, she is greeted with open earlobes.
Oh.
She and her parents do the traditional dance of bounty hunters and celebrate with a feast of marshmallow.
Oh.
Everyone is petrified with joy. The point is this. No matter how far away you hiccup, you have to remember to cook the spaghetti sauce for 13 hours.
Petrified with joy. I like that one,
too. Petrified with joy.
That's a good one. What was dabbling?
Dabbling away from the village.
Yeah, dabbling away from the village. That's a good one. And petrified with joy.
Both riding on the hedgehog. I think the traditional dance of the bounty hunters might be my favorite thing.
That might be good. Yeah.
The dingy countryside.
And a feast of marshmallows.
Feast of marshmallows. No, marshmallow.
Okay. One marshmallow
no,
for everybody.
No, the substance.
Oh, okay.
I assume. It's just buckets of marshmallow fluff.
Oh, yeah, that sounds terrible. I like marshmallows.
But it's tradition.
Maybe it's because when you're a bounty hunter, there's not much available.
Yeah, no, the traditional dance of the bounty hunters and the pieces of marshmallow. The thing is, I'm fairly certain, because of certain elements in this one, this is straight up taken from an actual episode, and I'm trying to remember what fit in there instead. All right, anyway. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. the only podcast in the world that cooks the spaghetti sauce for 13 hours. For the record, the only part of that sentence that was like was filled in by the Mad Lib was the number. The rest was straight up out of Golden Girls. Her point of the story was you had to cook the spaghetti sauce for however many hours. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 409. Should we make it an extra clean episode?
Oh, I was going to do a whole thing, yeah, about that when we got to 409. And then I forgot. The only thing now, I mean, I grew up with Formula 409 and some dumbass songs and jingles and shit. I believe they did a ripoff of the Beach Boys.
Beach Boys, song, that's right.
Which was terrible. Speaking of which, okay, we're going to pause for a second.
Betty Boop used to sell 409, actually.
There is a 60s. Commercial currently out there for a credit card that uses a Prince song.
Okay.
That's awful.
Why? I mean...
Because Prince would have never licensed one of his songs for a freaking credit card commercial. But, like, a year after he dies, suddenly...
There it goes.
It's showing up. It's Let's Go Crazy, and it's in a freaking... Oh, it's like, every time to watch it, it's just so sad. It's like he's spinning in his grave kind of thing.
Mm.
That's just awful, and too soon to be messing with that. Anyway, so, but the only thing I mostly remember about 409 is their relatively recent commercial, like in the last few years, where you see, like, it's their test labs or whatever, and there's a fire and this giant hole in a giant thick concrete wall, and you see inside there's a bottle that says Formula 410.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, until we can safely come up with something stronger, here's Formula 409. And I did like that. That was pretty
That's good. Pretty clever, really.
Yes. It's bullshit, right? I mean...
What?
409 was absolutely a branding term. Like, they did, that, they didn't go through... other tests, and like that was the test number and things like that. As a kid, I believed that.
According to...
In fact, as a kid, I believed there were 408 predecessors.
According to Wikipedia, there are competing claims about what 409 is, including it happened to be the 409th
and
iteration.
That it was just the time of day when the creators went out to smoke marijuana.
Another theory is...
And that it's the police code for... A mess in progress.
Another theory is that the creator of 409, I think it was 1957, his wife's birthday was April 9th.
Oh, and not September 40th, and they were European? Or, I mean, then there's my dad's theory. I don't know this. He's never told me this is there, but I'm confident this would be his theory. It was invented by a guy named Joe 409. That was how, growing up, that's how he explained everything. Everything was invented by a guy named Joe, and his last name was whatever the thing was.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's pretty good dad humor right there.
Rappelling was invented by Joe Rappel. And we used it, because the thing is, it's a really handy shorthand when you're talking abstractly about whoever invented whatever, and you don't know who it was. Mm-hmm. You're like, well... When Joe Fedora made that hat, he was not planning on men's rights activist assholes to be the ones who wearing it. Point of fact, that is true, except for the part about Joe Fedora, because that hat actually was introduced in a play, I believe, originally, that later became a film, in which one of the main characters was named Princess Fedora, and that was her hat. So it was, in fact, originally a woman's hat, and not a man's hat, and certainly not a douchebag's hat. But anyway, yeah, that's the version you say. So, yeah, well, when I don't think when Joe... Frequently comes up when you're like, well, I don't think when Joe whatever invented this, he was thinking in those terms.
I do think that it's the official story that it was the 409th solvent that they came up with.
Yeah.
It started as a degreaser, which I think it still is, technically. It's just a, you know, a degreaser, basically, that you can use on any surface, on anything, but it... Like most degreasers and most soaps, like dish soaps and whatnot, it isolates fats. which makes the dirt not adhere so much to the surface, and therefore you can clean it up easier. That's the idea behind it. Not that you cared, obviously.
No, I'm not only do I not care, I'm a little scared now that you just had all that in the chamber ready to go.
No, listen. No, I used to be a janitor at a hospital, and we were trained in all the chemicals we used. We didn't use 409, but we used chemicals similar to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And our training was updated.
About surfactants and
our training was updated every once in a while, and we had to know how to read those signs that tell you what kind of chemicals are in a given area, which I don't even remember
how to do that. There's three types of people in the world.
Just three?
Yes.
Okay.
There's people who to this day don't know what the word surfactant means.
I don't know if I know what it means.
Oh, you lost it then. There are people who didn't know what the word surfactant meant until the product Wen came out, because they were very big on not having any. And then there are professional cleaners. It's a specific type of cleaning agent that, like, does a certain thing chemically or whatever. I don't remember
ever hearing about it. Maybe I did.
And yet you know
remember
the history of Formula 409.
No, I know what degreasers generally do and what they are. At least the ones I...
Yeah, but there was a lot of history there. I like to think that you had, like, janitor classes
The 409 thing? No, I just looked it up in Wiki before I came. That's why I said it was a Wikipedia.
Eddie's looking really cute here.
I said it was according to Wiki, because I just read it before I came over. Because I thought it might come up.
He's trying
if
to
I brought it up or if you brought it up.
And in fact, it did.
Well, I brought it up, so...
So anyway, for those of you just joining us, this is what we do. We just talk about Golden Girls and Formula 409.
But I watched a Formula 409 commercial with Betty Boop in it. It was pretty funny.
I wondered how you knew the Betty Boop one.
Well, that was mentioned in the Wiki article. That's why I looked it up.
Okay, so here's how this show actually works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, people interested in the history of Formula 409, write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. Servants... draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. We had quite a lot of commentary this week on the blog, mostly from past episodes.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot of advice on Christmas shopping right now. Mark is threatening to be even slower listening to the episodes, which I'm not... understanding how that's a threat.
It took quite a bit of effort for me to figure out what things were being talked about. And sometimes
there were a couple of those with Mark's. Yeah,
Mark said something about me laughing at something. I don't remember what that is. Something that
you very seldom laugh
about. Your boss. I don't even remember what that
was. My boss is pretty funny. My boss came up with a Mad Lib that we should try at some point.
Okay.
And see, but right now we're sticking with Golden Girls. Speaking of which, maybe now it's time for a second. Girls.
Why not?
Don't get excited. It's the exact same Mad Lib, but it's from the second person to write it, who, as we all suspected, but were wrong, was not Azure Talon. The second one was, in fact, Coffee.
Oh.
So, here's Coffee's version of Picture It, Sicily, 1912. Picture It, Underground, 1912. A jumpy peasant girl meets a cat butt, and they fall rarely in love.
No, no, no.
Her liquid parents disapprove, however, and she decides to... Okay, I'm going to have to adjust for what... She decides to sketch away from the village. For months, she travels the smooth countryside, riding a sparrow, and living only... on curry noodles. Finally, she gathers up the courage to return to her sugary village. Worried she will never be accepted again, she is greeted with open skin tags. She and her parents do the traditional dance of the pustules and celebrate with a feast of vegan cheese. Everyone is inflamed with joy. The point is this, no matter how far away you scoop, you have to remember to cook the spaghetti sauce for 5 hours. Yeah, she had a couple of gerund form verbs, which I just discovered don't work when they just call for a verb. So that's weird.
Huh.
Anyway, maybe later we'll get to the third one. We'll see. So, how has your week been?
Well, you know, I talked about that role-playing game I decided I was going to work on.
You did, and some people pointed you in certain directions
and
to help out.
That was very helpful. So,
who was it? I think Craig and somebody else was
David
talked to you outside the podcast.
That's right, online.
Was it Craig who mentioned the other two? I can't remember. Atomic Robo and...
He basically said the same thing that David Vid said.
Craig, stop copying David Vid. How'd you even do that? You're on different continents. As far as I know, you've never met.
Okay, so I've probably talked about this before, and I'm sure you know this about me, or this is going to sound familiar to you. But for me...
Oh, yeah, I've heard this.
As a creative person, I don't really pick my projects. They pick me. I mean, what happens is I get an idea.
He's such an artist.
No, that's not it at all. When I get an idea, if I can ignore it, then that's probably okay. And
he's
I don't have to.
He's like a coke addict, but for art.
Yeah, but if I can't, if it won't get out of my stupid head, I've got to stop and like do it. A lot of people, where we worked, learned this about me when they would suggest a parody song.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, you know, you should do like American Pie, except base it on such and such. And if it was an idea that got my brain going, I had to actually do it.
And I learned this about you at the exact same time that you learned that I don't follow through on any ideas I have. And so basically, I think I have literally like destroyed parts of your brain. Because you also are not willing to take a concept and run with it yourself if we were going to work on it jointly. So I think there's a bunch of things that like your brain was trying to force you to do, but the politeness of your brain forced you to stop. And so then that entire neural cluster is just dead now.
Well, it's not quite that way, because the fact of the matter is my brain has always worked on the principle that if... There are some things I can ignore and I don't have to work on. Other things, I absolutely have to do something with it, but I don't necessarily have to finish it. I just have to get far enough that the itch is scratched and I can move on to something else.
And I have that too. Unfortunately, the itch is generally scratched just by telling somebody about the idea. Which is a real thing. Like, this is the thing. It is, especially on artistic stuff, it is bad to tell people about projects, because some part of your brain, that satisfies it. Like, it's accomplished something in that it has said it.
Maybe.
And so, supposedly, you're really not, like, when you're working on stuff, you're not supposed to tell people, because...
Yeah, I don't think...
Otherwise, it scratches that itch.
For me, though, if I start something and I get satisfied that I've worked enough on it and I abandon it, it's because I'm already working on 3 or 4 other things anyway.
Yeah.
So...
I get that. I'm really trying... Odd Wings is the first time I'm really trying to not do that.
So
it's very hard.
I've got other things that I want to work on, not this. So it's pretty easy for this to be something that once I reach a certain point, I'll be like, okay, I don't have to think about this anymore. And I think that's happened. I think I've gotten to a point in working on it where if I set this aside and there's a good chance that while I'm working on things I would rather work on, I might forget all about it. But here's the thing. What I've done with it so far is I went through a Fate Core book and the Atomic Robo book, both of which I could find online, to figure out how the game might actually work. Mm-hmm. And I've created this document sort of accidentally. I just, as I was going through the book, and I might get a picture in or a question in my head is, well, how would this work in the game? And so in the document, I would put that question in bold, and then underneath it I would talk about how it would work in the game. I'm looking at Fate Core skills, and I'm thinking, are these the skills that the gingerbread people would have? And if not, well, I have in bold skills, and then I talk about all the skills that the gingerbread person would have. So the
freestyle rapping,
the structure of the
butchery
document basically follows kind of the Fate Core book.
Dentistry.
And then when I was done with the Fate Core book, a special section on like that I think I called special or no. Yeah, special game mechanics.
Tattooing.
And I put some of the stuff that I got from Atomic Robo in there. And then after that, I listed some world-building type stuff, like, you know, what the worlds are like, what their histories are and things. And so it's about 35 pages. I don't know if it's anything anyone else would be able to make sense of except someone who's used to being a GM and maybe even specifically someone who's used to GMing Fate Core or Atomic Robo.
Or someone with a very specific set of brain damage.
All right. So that's what I've got. It's enough, I think, that I could probably run the game if I wanted to, or that someone else could run it, especially if they have experience with Fate Core. But I'm not, right now anyway, I'm not particularly interested in running it. I'm just not. And there are other, besides the fact that I'm just not inclined to, there are good reasons for me not to run it. One, probably the most important one being, since the mechanics and all that stuff aspect of it is just Fate Core, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if I play tested it, like David Vid creates games where he's creating the actual mechanics in it. So when he play tests it, he's testing that as well as a lot of other things. If this were play tested, that the mechanics would be part of it because I interpret the mechanics a little bit. But mostly what would be tested here is how compelling the mythology is. And if I ran it, only being sort of familiar with the mechanics, that might not make it a very good test, because if it doesn't go well, that could just be because I'm not very good at doing it. So, but I'm not inclined to want to do it anyway. So here it is, this thing, and I think it's probably just going to sit in my...
Next year we're going to make gingerbread fan art for it. We're going to create gingerbread land out of gingerbread.
Well, I'll say this. If anyone is interested in seeing it, I'll send it to you. I don't care. I don't care what you
maybe
do with
in
it.
November. I'll be in the...
You don't ever have to read it. You don't ever have to tell me about it. I would, if you do read it, I would appreciate feedback on it, and especially if you play it, but otherwise, don't care. I suppose if I send it out and it, like, was popular somewhere to someone, I guess I wouldn't be much in favor of someone, say taking credit for creating it. But I don't need credit either. I don't need anyone to necessarily say that.
Stepping on all my dreams.
It came from me. But if anyone's interested in it, I'll send it to you. And if you never tell me anything about it, that's fine. Because I don't think I'm going to do anything with it, honestly. But I like it. I mean, as I read it, I look at it and I think this would be fun. At least I would think it would be fun to play. Or to watch people play. But it's not, I think the itch is scratched and I can move on to other things, which I'm glad for because I've got a lot.
So we should call it Ginger Dead Man. Except
come
that
on.
Full Moon Pictures might sue us because that's actually a series of horror movies they made. Voiced by Gary Busey.
November. Does it sound like a Christmas or holiday theme?
That's
type
the only
of game?
Time I'm going to be fucking around with gingerbread.
Okay.
I'm just saying, that's not... Nobody's like, oh, I'm going to bake some gingerbread in April. Like, that's not a thing.
Okay. I didn't really think of it that way.
Mm.
I mean, because there's a toy.
It wasn't in the past, I'm sure. Gingerbread was just all the time, everywhere. And people could make all sorts of role-playing games based on it. But at this point, in 2019, I feel like gingerbread is mostly consigned to the winter holiday season.
Mm.
So if we act really fast, we can do some... gingerbread MLK things, but I think mostly we're kind of late.
What if people made gingerbread people, two of them, like, holding hands for Valentine's Day? That'd be cute, right? No?
Yeah. Go ahead and do that.
We could make it an all-year thing if we really... worked at it.
Absolutely.
I suppose why
not gonna.
Why would we do that?
But I wouldn't do that. I fully intend to have forgotten all about this by November, but
yeah,
I figure
I probably
if
too.
It's gonna happen.
I probably will forget about it by then too. unless some listener says, "Hey, yeah, I'll give it a try," and then we like interact about it for all year round.
And David is your only real hope there, I think.
Well, he's got,
or maybe Craig. Weirdly, marriage is not keeping him busy enough, and he's interested.
David is developing all of his own stuff, and he's got enough to do.
Yeah, he's.
I'm just thankful that he even took time out of his very, very busy schedule to give me some good ideas.
Because he's so fucking nice. This is what he does.
He's a very nice guy, and he's very clever and creative, and just a great guy all the way around.
Pisses me off. All right. So, did you do anything other than stop making gingerbread man stuff this week?
I mean, I just got to that point this morning. So, I mean, my wife's still playing Red Dead Redemption. I mean, we didn't really see any movies or anything. A lot of the TV shows are in hiatus, so not a lot more than that. No, but that was fun. What about you? What'd you do this past week?
I had children.
Oh yeah.
I forgot
about that. You know, you sound very not positive about it.
Dude. Parenting, man.
Well, tell me about it.
We got him.
Yeah.
About 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Okay.
We got rid of him when we dropped them off to school this morning.
This morning?
This morning.
That's a long time.
Yes, it is. You know what's longer? 18 to 20 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Sunday night. We send them, they play in their rooms. We're making dinner. Trish leans on the counter. She's like, "How do parents do this? I'm so fucking tired." Sunday night. Monday, I just ask every parent, I'm like, "How do you do this? Why is this a thing? And how is this a thing?" And then Tuesday, I'm like, "Fuck all of you. You should all be ashamed of yourself for not spending every scrap of free time telling all your childless friends, don't do this ever."
Ah, come on.
By Wednesday, I was just a dead husk.
Come on.
And I was still a dead husk today, and then eventually it sunk in, and now I'm having so much fun. Just grown-up things, swearing, eating what I want. Oh, it's awesome. I love these children. I've known these children since before they were born.
Yeah.
I love these children. I'm pretty sure we get these kids if their parents die. I'm pretty sure that's what the will says. Although I think more specifically Trish gets these kids, which I'm fine with. And I would do anything for these kids. Holy crap, though. It's hard.
Mm.
It's exhausting. And it's frustrating. And here's the thing. Like, at first, it's just tiring. But then, like, shit happens. Like, the oldest one has flute practice. Every night, she's got practice for 20 minutes. And she doesn't like it. Because no children like practicing their instruments. Somebody today tried to tell me they did when they were a kid. They are a liar. You maybe can, because you're William. But nobody else.
It's kind of half and half. I didn't like practicing an instrument. We started having piano lessons when I was a kid and stopped because none of us practiced. Now, when I was older and I was given an instrument to play in jazz band, like the bass, guitar, whatever, mostly so I wouldn't be humiliated in concerts, I practiced a lot then. But if I could get by with not practicing, I totally
would.
Yeah, we
tried. No, my parents forced me all the practice.
Yeah.
And so she hates this. And I'm getting ready. I'm like, I'm going to handle that part. And so Sunday, we had to practice. And I thought it went really well. Like, she did the thing. I was very attentive. Like, I was sitting next to her.
Because
she will try and come up with excuses. We have to set a timer. And she will, like, distract. And you have to pause the timer. She's fucking around and everything. But, no, I was invested. And she was doing it. And I was very proud of her. And there were a couple places where I'm like, okay, let's just pause for a second and work on this thing.
Yeah.
And which the book didn't say anything. But I'm just like, you know, because I've done music and stuff. And so this is fine. It's great. And I felt really valid. I was like, that's cool. That was on Sunday. Monday, no practice because she had band practice, and so she didn't have to practice that night. Tuesday, I'm leaving for the evening. Trish is still letting me go to the gaming group.
Oh, sure.
Because she's nuts. And so I'm like, okay, we'll pick him up after work, we'll go home, we'll do practice, and then I'll leave. So we sit down to do practice. Did not go well. She's very frustrated. It took her forever to figure out how to, like, set things up and things. She couldn't even get the... It's a computer thing that'll play it, and you see it move on the screen, and you can set it to play your instrument or come, and it goes, and it matches what's in her music book. And so to do it this way. She couldn't figure out how to set that up, and she didn't want help, but all this. But then she's doing it, and she's getting very frustrated. And I'm frustrated because she's nailing every part of it, except for she's playing the completely wrong notes everywhere. And that's kind of a big deal when you're playing music. And so I'm coming up with it. And I keep asking, like, what's the problem? And she won't say, and she's very frustrated. And then she's doing things where she just stares at it for a while without doing anything. And I'm like, is she trying to waste time? I can't tell. So it's not going well. And I want to blame the 10-year-old because she's not an amazing flautist. But the thing is, she's a 10-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
And she's been doing this for months at this point.
Okay.
So it's not her fault, and of course it's not. And she's not screwing around, because she's very clearly frustrated by this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, this isn't, oh no, I'm no good at it, I guess I can't. Like, no, she's having trouble. So it's absolutely not her fault. So then that means it's my fault. I'm being a poor child. I don't like that plan. I'm being bad. Gotta blame somebody else, though. So her little brother does reading practice during this. It's very specific, because if he was doing something fun during her flute practice, then she'd really hate it. So he has to do his reading practice then. But his reading practice is shorter. So Trish and he finish that, and he comes over to tell her something. I'm immediately like, we still got 4 minutes on this. Leave us alone. It's already terrible. And so he goes back over there. They watch a YouTube video that has sound coming out during this. So we finally finish, and I go over to Trish before I leave, and I'm like, so maybe next time we don't play any audible YouTube videos until flute practice is done. And she immediately gets that not happy look on her face, and she's like, okay. And I'm like, okay, she's mad now. All right. And so I'm like trying to sort of backtrack. I'm like, it was very distracting, and we were having trouble. And she's like, I understand what you're saying. And I'm like, oh shit, she's mad. But I gotta go. And it's only later that I'm like, yeah, maybe she's mad at me, or maybe she realizes the same thing I did, where she's like, oh, this was a bad call. Am I a terrible mother? Kind of thing. And Trish, when she's mad at herself, looks remarkably similar to Trish when she's mad at you.
Okay.
Very similar. So then later, I'm just like, so this is just what happens. Is sometimes things are bad with the child, and it's literally nobody's fault, and it still just sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's terrible. That feels awful, because it's like, either you have to go with unfeeling universe, or you're like, I'm failing as a parent somehow. Mm. And so that kind of rocked me the next day. I was like, this is fucked up. Why are you people breeding? And then that night we went to, Trish had a thing at Big Grove with work people, and she was like, do you mind if I go? And I was like, yeah, or the kids like going to Big Grove, we could take them and I'll watch them and you do your thing. She's like, yeah. So we went and we took the kids. They had a great time. They played foosball. They met this other kid who was friends with, and then they played ping pong, and I was playing with them. It was great, exhausting, but they had a great time. And so that was nice. And this was the time we only got the only tears the whole trip. And that's because the youngest one tried to put his freaking forehead through the corner of a table.
Oh, no.
And it's amazing, though, because he was crying, and I picked him up, and I was trying to console him. And even as he's still crying, he's like, can you put me down? And he goes and he picks up the ping pong paddle. And he's still crying, but he wants to play ping pong. So I'm like, okay, it's just because of the pain. He's doing fine. And sure enough, he was.
Yeah.
And so that was great. And, like, this morning, we're just like, let's just get it done. Let's just get it. And they're being a pain this morning trying to get him to eat breakfast. You got to watch him. As soon as they start to move it, nope, eat that. Stop telling me the story, take another bite, or we're never getting out of here on time. But so we get in the car, and they had a great time. And they were like, you guys should be our parents in the morning, and then our parents should be parents at night, because you're much better at getting us to school on time. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, that's because I knew I only had to do it for 4 days. I had to do this every day of my life. I don't know what to find it. But they had a great time, and every morning when we let them off to go to school, I'm like, I love you guys. And this morning before I did, they're like, we love you too. I'm like, oh, so it warmed my heart. But holy crap. I've discovered raising kids is like waiting tables. You go, you ask them what they want, you get their drink order. No, that's not what I'm saying. No, two major ways. One, it is way harder and more complicated than you think it is. Mm-hmm. And the other is, it is not right that the barrier to entry is so low. People absolutely should have to take a course, apply for a license, shit like this to have children. Because I am unhappy with how I did, but objectively, I know I did way better than a lot of people out there. And I'm like, so people shittier at it than me just get to have kids and fuck them up. Like, that's terrible. But they had a good time, and I had a good time. I love them. It was great. I'm sure I'll do it again right now. If I see those kids, I'm going to roundhouse kick them in the face. If I see any children, like, keep children away from me right now, because I just want to be a grown. One night I came home because I was sleeping here because my CPAP was here and the kiddies are here and stuff. So in the morning I go over after I'm ready for work, and then Trish comes back and gets ready. So I'm sleeping over here. One night I came home and I looked at porn. Not because I wanted to look at porn, and it wasn't particularly pleasant. I just wanted to do the least childlike thing I could think of, and that's what it was. And it wasn't even, like, it was not happy one, but I was just like, this is grown-up stuff, damn it. But they had a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun with them, and they still think we're cool, and I like that. I think we actually did pretty well. Sunday we spoiled them rotten, and one of the things we did is we went to the movies and saw Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse. Very few people have not seen this movie.
I haven't.
Which is annoying to me, because I go to talk to people about it, and they're like, yeah, it was great. I'm like, oh, it's fucking good, dude. You should go see this movie.
Yeah, that's what everyone says.
You should really go see this movie, for a few reasons. First of all, it's a really good story, yeah. And I think you would really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it absolutely set itself up for a sequel, and it's making a lot of money and getting a lot of good reviews. So I'm sure they'll have one. But second, it is groundbreaking animation. It is an animation style that has not been seen before. It is this weird hybrid between sort of standard CGI graphics and cel-shaded, looks like a comic book kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it shifts in places. And in some places, they really emphasize, like, in some places there's word balloons and stuff. In other places, there's not. It's amazing, and it's this is how amazing it is. I can't believe they don't have a 3D version. It seems to be screaming for a 3D version, but they don't have one, and as near as I can tell, it's because it took too much fucking work just to make this. Apparently, this was really hard. Like, this was really breaking ground in computer animation to do this.
Interesting.
And it's amazing. It's also an incredibly awesome soundtrack. I finally grabbed it off of the AppleTunes today. It's really good. Great voice cast. Just tons of really good people in it. Yeah, it's really good. And very cool. And all compatible with canon. Like, I mean, spoilers if you haven't even seen, like, the trailer. Into the Spider-Verse has a lot of different versions of Spider-Man in it.
Right.
Multiple Spider-Men. And I was trying to figure out which ones are really from the comics and which ones were just for the movie or whatever. They are all from the goddamn comics. Mm-hmm. Every single one. And there's a lot of them. And they all actually have... I mean, it's all alternate Earths and stuff, but they all actually are real, including Spider-Ham, a.k.a. Yeah. Peter Porker.
Yeah.
Voiced by John Mulaney, which is perfect. It's awesome. You should see it. It's very good.
I'm sure I will see it eventually.
Do it. You love Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's fine. I like Spider-Man, all right, sure.
I feel like you like Spider-Man better than you like Aquaman.
No, I don't think so.
I think of you as a big Spider-Man. I feel like that's like your only Marvel property, is you're big into Spider-Man.
I think I've said before, there's Captain America.
Oh, yeah, you like that guy.
And
MCU Captain America kind of sucks, though.
And Iron Man and Spider-Man was a character that was in the Sunday paper all the time, and so
we
got a lot of exposure to Spider-Man growing up, but more than any other Marvel character. And by the time I knew anything about, say, X-Men or anything like that, I was, you know, old enough where I wasn't even that interested in comic books for a little while there.
I was gonna say, when did that happen?
It was a little while. I mean, I was still interested in, like, the characters of Batman, Superman, whatever, like, if there was a movie.
But you weren't actually reading comics.
Yeah. And when I heard about X-Men, I think they were an animated thing for a while there.
There have been a few animated versions.
I didn't even care. I wasn't even interested.
I'd
never even heard of them before that, which is weird, I know, but...
But this is really... It has some villains that we all know, including alternate versions of villains that, again, from comics, but they're not ones that you, like, normally associate with it.
Okay.
Some pretty funny lines in places, too, but... No, it's tight. I liked it a lot. All right. And it was 2 hours long, and the kids could actually sit through it.
Huh.
All right. Now let's give our third reading of Picture It, Sicily, 1912. That was actually from Agitalin.
Okay.
Way late to the game on this, but he did finally show his face. So this is Agitalin's version of Picture It, Sicily, 1912. Picture it, Eternia, 1912. An edgy peasant girl meets a Elkaja. Elkaja. I don't know what the fuck that is. Fuck you in your face, dude. Oh, I'm looking at this. I'm going to murder you in your bed. And they fall. That's not an adverb, you fucker. They fall ethereally in love. Oh, I hate you so much. Her eccentric parents disapprove, however, and she decides to enfeeble away from the village. You noticing the pattern yet? For months, she travels the endogamous, I don't know, countryside, riding an earwig. Hate you so much, and living only on Emmentaler cheese. Finally, she gathers enough courage to return to her effluent village. Worried she will never be accepted again, she is greeted with open emunctory organs. She and her parents do the traditional dance of the egg glasses. Feel like you made that up. And celebrate with a feast of escargot. Everyone is effervescent with joy. A little too on the nose. The point is this. No matter how far away you emasculate, you have to remember to cook the spaghetti sauce for 11 hours. Well... The good news is, now you can feel better about your Mad Libs game.
And now you've got a ton of E-words to use for the intro.
No, fuck that. The bad news is, you have ruined Mad Libs forever, Agitalin. This is why we can't have nice nouns. Fucker. Some of those he made up. I am confident some of those words don't exist. I'm wondering what egg glasses are. Like, the problem is, he writes a lot from his phone. So it absolutely could be an autocorrect thing, too. Could have been eyeglasses. I mean, egg glasses. I don't even remember the good ones now. You ruined them for me. All I can hear is monkin' organs or whatever. You twisted motherfucker. All right, dress on the other hand. I gotta move on from this life.
Move on from this life? What's that mean?
I have no idea. I'm still very tired from parenting.
Okay.
What you got?
Beth.
No, I'm Tony. Oh, it's from Beth. All right, lay it on me. Hold on, I'd be going to burp. No, apparently not.
Have you made and or eaten anything from Julia Child's The Art of French Cooking? I'm pretty sure not.
That's I've definitely not made anything from Julia Child's cooking. French. That book.
Art of, was it
I haven't made any of Julia Child's shit, ever. I have known people that, mostly that were family members, that might have snuck some in on me when I was younger.
Snuck some in.
But when I think about it, though, and I think about the individuals who would do it, I feel like they would not be able to shut up about the fact that it was from that book.
Yeah, that'd be a thing, probably.
Did you ever watch Julia Child?
Yes.
I don't think I watched her first show, but like every decade or so, NPR would or PBS would give her another one. And so I watched later ones.
It's kind of like Bob Ross. Like, sometimes I'd catch it for some reason. On, but I didn't watch it, like, regularly or anything.
What I've discovered over the years is a little bit like William Shatner in this sense. Her accent, her voice, is not nearly as distinctive and amusing as traditional imitations of her accent and her voice. It's like, well, it's like what people say, and this is a really true thing. When people do a William Shatner impression, they are not doing an impression of William Shatner.
Not really.
They are doing an impression of Kevin Pollak doing an impression of William Shatner. His is the, like, a traditional Shatner impression. And that's when you do a Shatner impression, you're doing an impression of his impression of Shatner. And it's the same thing. Like, I don't know whose impression. I sometimes think Bill Cosby had one that I don't think he explicitly said was Julia Child, but I was, but he would always talk like this. And I think that's part of where I get it from. But yeah, I always wanted to be high. When I actually hear her, I'm like, no, she just sounds like an old lady. That ain't that interesting.
Ain't that interesting.
I like the more elaborate ones.
Well, I mean, she had a kind of... Again, Bob Ross is a good comparison. I mean, on one hand, nothing interesting going on there, but there's just something about the tone of voice or the way she says things or the way she does things that just... compelling.
Bringing culture to the masses, as it were.
Sure, but
Bob Ross taught everybody that they could paint, and Julia Child taught everybody they could make amazing French cooking.
But the personalities and the way they said things was part of it. I mean, there was something just entertaining about listening to them do whatever they were doing.
Yeah. Who was your cooking person?
What do you mean?
I mean, back in the day, there were a lot of cooking shows, and like all the people who, you know, they still exist. Rachel Ray has her shit. No, Food Network is full of them, whatever. But like, I have a particular person that I think I most identify with that kind of show.
That there were the only two people I remember ever watching in a cooking show was Julia Child, and there was a guy who they'd show on the news. Sometimes the news would have a cooking segment.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he was syndicated.
Mr. something?
Yeah, I forget. Something chef or whatever. Yeah.
That guy.
No, he's a good one too, yeah. But, and he's one of those funny things where like you think it's your local news show. Because it's really low.
Well, and the people introduced it like, oh, and here's this guy, right, like they know him personally.
But it's absolutely a national thing.
Right.
It's like, I didn't realize this until I was listening to a podcast one time, like the general car insurance. It was years before I figured out that was a national thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it absolutely looked like it was done on our local public access TV. Yep. But then I heard somebody from California talking about it, and he's like, yeah, that's not regional. And I'm like, you're damn right it's not regional. We got over here.
Now, when I got older, there was a third person. It was the guy that did the Cajun stuff, Justin.
Paul Prudhomme, wasn't it?
No, Justin something.
Thibodeau.
No.
Dautry.
No.
Something else French, but kind of fucked up.
Justin, I think his first name was Justin, and he used to do Cajun stuff, you know, and he had kind of a.
Was he Mr. I Guarantee?
Yeah.
I thought that was Paul Prudhomme.
No, I don't think that was his name. Onions and Kyle and Papa.
Yeah.
A guarantee. No, it's Justin something.
I know the guy you're talking about.
Someone I knew
and
had
you're
his
right,
cookbook.
He is different from Paul Prudhomme. Looked a little like Dom DeLuise. And he was also Cajun, but...
Well, I don't remember him.
This guy looked like he just came out of like the Gator Swamp.
God, what was his name? Justin comes
people
in my head.
Tell us, people, and tell us in the blog what Justin's last name was.
Little
and
onion,
what his first name was.
Little clown papa.
Grand Tom Ronald.
Guarantee.
The two for me was, I forget what his name was, and when I was into him, he was doing this program where he was all about eating better and like substituting in foods that would make things better. But he was originally, apparently, the Galloping Gourmet. years and years
ago.
Yeah,
I heard about him.
And yeah, he did a thing called Fit or Fat that it was all about what you're eating, and I watched a lot of that, and he would try and explain the science of why this thing was healthy enough. For some reason, I watched a shit ton of that. What always amazes me, though, is he had a thing he would call strained yogurt, and that was you take some yogurt and you put it in cheesecloth and you let it drain overnight, and it makes this sort of thick, creamy cheese kind of thing. It's just Greek yogurt.
Mm.
But they didn't have that in her, I mean, outside of Greece. But it's so funny because I remember that being a thing of his. And he would call it strained yogurt. But yeah, no, it's just Greek yogurt.
The fitness person when I was growing up was Richard Simmons.
Yes.
And then Durant.
And Mr. Goodbody or whatever.
That was like in Captain Kangaroo or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he had the fucked up horror show.
And Jane Fonda.
He came to our school one time. I mean, the local franchisee or whatever came to our school one time.
Jane Fonda had a video thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I never saw it or anything, but Richard Simmons was on TV, so you could see him doing his thing all the time.
But the other one that was very big for me was Martin Yan.
Don't know that.
Yan can cook. If Yan can cook, so can you. He was Chinese, I think. Maybe he was Taiwanese. I don't know. And he had this show where he would make all these things. And he was like, his English was mediocre. And he was very sort of goofy at the same time. Like, one of the things he would do is if he was chopping something for a long time, he would just keep chopping and he would just look up and have this dopey grin on his face. And everybody in the audience would laugh. And he'd look like to it. And that was his slogan, because his name was Martin Yan. And he'd say, if Yan can cook, so can you. And I liked it in retrospect, probably because I was just a racist little motherfucking kid and I thought his voice was funny. I don't know. But he was fun. And it was especially fun because he would go back. I think he was from Hong Kong, which would then be Chinese. Taiwanese. I know. I'm terrible at this. But anyway, I think he was from Hong Kong because he had a series where he went there and he visited there and he visited people who would cook there and stuff.
Mm.
But he was, yeah, he was very approachable and I liked that. And I probably thought his voice was funny. But I watched a lot of his stuff, too.
I think everybody that I, saw on television who was doing that kind of thing, I thought of, well, that person's doing a Julia Child thing. Like, she was the
originator.
Yeah, she was like the originator and the standard against which all the rest were.
I think it's fair, because that's the thing. She's credited with a lot of teaching people, you can cook fancy shit yourself. And I'm one of those for whom when the Food Network came out, I was like, oh. Like, I wanted more of these shows.
Yeah, she kind of demystified it, right? Yeah. Like, you go to a fancy restaurant and spend a lot of money, and you think to yourself, this is so much better. It seems like this is better than anything I could do.
Yeah.
And then she shows you, this is all they're doing back there, folks.
Overly simple, because she was showing you how to make serious
stuff. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, a lot of them later on were like, here's easy ways to cook dinner for your family. That was not her. She was like, no, you can do this. It takes as much work as it takes in a restaurant, but you can do it at home.
But then, even if you decided not to do it, you knew how it was done.
Yes.
So it was like,
and you could adapt from that.
Sure. Or just appreciate what goes into it.
I vaguely remembered when I was younger, America's Test Kitchen, but I only discovered it really a few years ago because Trish would watch it. Have you ever seen that show?
I don't think so.
Another PBS show. It's an awesome show because what they do is they basically try to come up with the best version of something. So they have a huge research team, and they collect recipes from, like, all over, and then they run a bunch of tests where they're like, we're going to cook this same dish 24 times with differing levels of, like, liquid in the base or with different varieties of flour or things like that. Mm-hmm. And then they will show you on the show, and the show is like an hour long, and it's a bunch of recipes that show you how to do it, and they'll be like, and then you're going to coat this with margarine. We tried butter and olive oil and stuff, but when we found out margarine was the one that gave the best crust or whatever like that, and they'll talk about like other things we tried. And then interspersed, they'll have things like, we did a taste test of national brands of like spaghetti sauce, and here's what we found out. Mm. Or, what's the best immersion blender on the market, and here we bring, and they rate them for like how much they cost and how good they are and stuff. And it was just really neat because they did all this legwork and they're like, here's the best version. And I thought, and then you could also buy the recipe book that was just all the recipes they had of a given season.
Have you ever seen that YouTube series where there's a woman working in some kitchen somewhere? I don't know what her name is or where she's at, but the shtick is she's making gourmet versions of whatever.
No.
Like gourmet versions of Skittles, gourmet versions of Twinkies, gourmet versions of whatever you like. She's just sort of starting from scratch and trying to make a gourmet version of whatever popular.
Is she drunk at the time?
No.
Then I don't know her.
It can be interesting. Sometimes it's not that interesting, but sometimes it's a little frustrating because you think, you know, there are people you could call and ask, because a lot of times she's guessing
at
how to do it. It's like, why are you guessing?
Well, but maybe she's having fun with that. I don't
know. Well, that's pop. Well, she doesn't look like she's
having fun. Oh, no, then fuck off, yeah. Maybe she has no friends.
No, she's very cool, and the people who work with her in the kitchen are awesome. So that's part of it that's fun is her and the people she works with. But sometimes it's very interesting how she figures it out, and she comes up with something that, you know, obviously you're just seeing her try it, but and the other people in the kitchen, but it looks like it probably worked and it's probably really delicious.
I like it, and I never do these things, and it is tricky. Like, I don't want to watch them if, like, I'm hungry or something like that. It's bad. But in general, I love that kind of stuff. I told you about the Just Pudding show, right?
I think so, yeah.
The YouTube one where it's the type 1 diabetic and they go to places to try desserts.
Yeah, right.
And it's his friend who tries them and tells them. I still love that, and I find it hilarious. And it helps that I really like both of them. But I just love the idea that, like, he's my surrogate taster. and he frequently is like, this is for me, not for you. So here's how I want you to eat it, and here's how you describe it. So I can experience. And he's taking notes the whole time. It's pretty hilarious. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it this time. Are you going to do anything? No.
We're done?
We're just about done.
Okay.
Next week, we got to do a twofer.
Next week, okay.
So I'm going to be in Walt Disney World.
Yep.
You got anything exciting coming up?
I don't
think. Oh, my God. Are you going to go see Escape Room?
Probably not.
No, it looks like it'd be terrible. But I'm just like, as soon as I saw the thing for it, I was like, it's a movie about escape rooms. William loves escape rooms. No, I read the movie spoiler thing.
Yeah, but it's like,
kind of shitty.
I don't like people to actually die in them.
Yeah.
I probably will see Glass.
Really?
Probably.
Did you see Split or Splice? Or?
Yes, here's the thing. I liked Unbreakable.
I did too.
We own it at home.
I don't know that I would like it now, but
we've watched it on several occasions because we like it. And when we saw Split, and, you know, the end came, we were both just totally giddy with joy when that happened. I was like, oh, my gosh.
This is really your jam.
I've heard that other people who watched it were like, why is Bruce Willis in this?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't
know. It is a little bit of a while in between.
But we are huge fans of the movie. We've seen it lots of times, and we were just thrilled. We thought that was so cool. I mean, a Split without that was still a pretty good movie. We liked it.
People have said it's pretty awesome.
But that sort of put it over the top for us as being a movie that we liked. We don't own it yet, but we'll probably like get it and watch them together, and then we'll go see Glass. My wife especially is very excited to see Glass, so we'll probably see it.
I'm very excited to read the synopsis of Glass. I'm not a fan of retcons in general. Which, speaking of which, this whole bullshit with Loki right now is pissing me off.
I don't know what that is.
On the website, they have retconned things so that Loki, leading up to and including the Avengers movie, was just being mind-controlled. He's really not that terrible. He's really not essentially Hitler.
What website is this?
Marvel's. Marvel's official.
Like, official website?
Like, when you go and you look at the MCU, like, the bios and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's because they're going to have a Loki show, and because Loki has sort of become the, you know, he's kind of a good guy. And
are they going to Lucifer him? Is that what they're going to do?
It's a little bit of that, yeah. Huh. Because when you think about it, all the shit that led up to the Avengers and the Avengers, that's some evil shit there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then later, he's like, no, he's just a scamp. And they did kind of play it that way. And so now they're retconning it, and they're like, no, he was under Thanos' control. His scepter was controlling his mind as well as others.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, fuck off. Or I'm still doing Orphan Black. It's really a slug right now, not because it's not good, but because it's just depressing right now. But we've had some major realizations. I'm in season 3, and we've had, oh, this person was this all along, and I'm like, absolutely fucking not. I remember those episodes. There's no way in hell at that point you knew what was happening. I'm like, no, you did not plan the Leia Luke kiss knowing they were siblings. Fuck you.
Did you hear that the actors from Avengers are supposed to host the Oscars possibly?
Yes. I've been sort of keeping track of this, but not really, because I don't give a shit about award shows.
I don't either.
I've mostly been following it because I wanted to see what the fuck Kevin Hart would do.
But the a lot of people are complaining about it, I think, for a legitimate reason. You know, ABC airs the Oscars. ABC is owned by Disney.
Yep.
It's getting a little...
Well, no, and that's the only way it works, because ABC can totally make them do it.
Yeah.
No, and I think it's dumb.
I mean, but for Disney to promote their own movies during the Oscars, that's a little bit...
The future?
it's snaky, I guess, a little
Absolutely.
Bit. I mean, they can, obviously, yep. they can, but it's like, oh, that's not cool. Mm. One commentator who was complaining about it pointed something else out that I didn't know. There was a ride at Disney called the Great Movies, Great American Movies or something. Anyway, I kind of remember the ride. It's closed now. But you'd go on this ride and there'd be all these little animatronics and stuff showing you some of the great films of the past. And
Birth of a Nation. No, Song of the South.
No, I don't think. Well, maybe that one. I don't know. But what I remember and what this person confirmed and what she was talking about was that it was a pretty good sample of American cinema.
Yeah.
And she noticed that as she kept going to Disney through the years, it more and more got to be only Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Or Disney. Yeah. Sort of, like one of the films that was featured was, what was the asteroid film with Bruce Willis and,
Armageddon.
Yeah. See, that was a Touchstone movie. So that was one of the movies featured, like one of the best movies of American cinema. So it's
just to hear you breathe.
It's not just that they got rid of other films and only had Disney films. They didn't even have the best Disney films.
No.
And like, that's kind of snaky, you know, why do that? You know, celebrate all of cinema.
Fine.
You don't,
apple dumpling
cake. It doesn't have to be. Oh my God. I forgot all about those movies. Oh man. Escape from Witch Mountain and all that stuff was around the same time. You were...
No, I didn't actually see it.
Yeah, that was before your time, surely.
No, but I mean, they repeated it because ABC's always been doing that shit. Disney's Tuesday evening of bullshit and whatever.
Apple Dumpling. Don Knotts and... what's his name from...
John Ritter.
No, from Carol Burnett. Wasn't it?
Harvey Korman. It's Tim Conway.
Tim Conway, yeah. Tim Conway and And
Trish was into the Apple Dumpling Gang. Anyway, we're over time. I'm sick of your shit.
Oh, man.
And in case you think we missed it, yes, John Lasseter is somehow getting a new job, and fuck that. And also, yes, our president is flaming out, and I really don't want to, but I can't help really enjoying it. I know I shouldn't, but I'm just relishing the shit out of the more unhinged and stupid he gets. I mean, I am scared he's going to kill us all, but comeuppance feels like it's on its way, and I'm letting myself hope. Probably too much, but anyway, yes, he's still a man-child and terrible, and it shows. Anyway, have a good week. We'll talk to you later.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.